Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 12, 2014. Officials from the ruling SPLM party dismissed threats from the IGAD member states to punish individuals blocking efforts to achieving peace in South Sudan.
They can say whatever they want to say that you have to sign it within 60 days. But for us, it is not about 60 days. If we agree even within 10 days, why not?
And former South Sudanese diplomat says he was instructed by Juba to vote in favor of enhanced member status for Palestine people at the United Nations.
I was a deputy permanent representative of South Sudan to the UN. I got my instructions clearly from the head of mission, which saying that we need to go and vote in favor of the right of self-determination.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We go first to Juba. President Kiir briefed government officials today on his trip to Addis Ababa, where peace talks are resuming this week to end the fighting that has left thousands dead and more than 1 million people displaced. It's not clear what Mr. Kiir told officials, but his delegates, along with those representing rebel leader Riek Machar and other interested parties, are in the Ethiopian capital to hammer out an agreement that allows a transitional government within 60 days. The SPLA spokesperson now acknowledges a number of soldiers have deserted their posts in Jonglei State. Earlier this week, Colonel Philip Aguer denied reports that SPLA troops abandoned their posts in Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile States. As Philip Aleu reports from Juba, Aguer says they leave because they have not been paid in several months.
Colonel Aguer confirms a section of his troop left Gadiang military base in Jonglei State earlier this week. He downplayed the significance of the desertions by saying Sudan People Liberation Army is not the only military institution in the world to experience rebellious behaviors among its soldiers. In particular, he dismissed a report that thousands of soldiers were deserting border fields in Jonglei State.
We don't know the record of the exact number, but that is not a new thing. Desertions, you ask any armies, the modern armies, whether they know desertion, is something which is normal. It's is how you handle the impact and how you handle the desertion itself, depending on the laws and the rules that are available in every army. But otherwise, that is merely an administrative issue. SPLA is still in control of Gadiang.
Aguirre says the delayed payments of soldiers is to blame for the desertions, not political opposition to President Salva Kiir. He staunchly denies reports that some soldiers are starving in Upper Nile, Unity, and Jonglei states.
The quality of food, that may be an issue, but the whole country is in economic problems, and the army have to bear part of this problem. So it's not true that they have problems of food and salaries. Yes, salaries were late, but they are thin.
Earlier this month, civic servants in central Equatoria said they had not received their salaries since February. Opposition military spokesman Lurwai Kwang says government troops and Ugandan army have abandoned Gadiang, poked up and were Nyol Post, and were heading towards Bor. He says he's not sure why members of the South Sudan Army are deserting their posts.
We suspect that they're fearing that they're going to be cut off once the rain season is in full swing. Gadiang was occupied from January by the UPDF, some SPLA fighters, and all these forces retreated. So it is like the government forces and their allies, especially the UPDF, that had abandoned Gadiang.
Lul denies government claims that they still control Gadiang, Poktap, and Werinyol in Jonglei. He said the SPLA in opposition now control those areas abandoned by government troops.
We do not want to leave any security vacuum, because once we have security vacuum, chances of having some criminals causing trouble in those areas are very high, and that's why our forces have moved in. Some are still moving in to occupy the military barracks so that lawlessness and disorder does not reign.
Lul claims could not be independently verified by international or local aid agencies operating in Jonglei State. In March, dozens of wounded soldiers protest in Juba, citing repeated delays in receiving their wages. The soldiers blocked several main roads in Juba, demanding their pay back from the government. Official data said the soldiers were paid. SPLA soldiers say they have seen received their pay back. One soldier, who wishes to remain anonymous, confirmed that some soldiers deserted the army because they had not been paid. For BOA News, I am Philip Onalew in Juba.
South Sudan's ruling party says it is ready to implement the resolutions of the symposium held in Addis Ababa last week. Party leaders say they will respect the 60-day deadline for both government and rebel negotiators to end South Sudan's political crisis. As Mungume Dev's Rakarinj reports from Juba, the recent deal signed in the Ethiopian capital is a bittersweet to most party officials.
SPLM Secretary for External Affairs, Suzanne Jambo, told reporters in Juba today that government delegates were surprised by the new 60-day deadline to negotiate a final peace deal.
To our understanding, when we were at the deliberations there as SPLM, the opposition were of the same opinion of 6 months. So the 60 days perhaps may have been brought in by external hands. This is our analysis. That was not what was agreed upon by both the SPLM, the other stakeholders, which are the civil society, the faith-based organizations, etc., as well as SPLM and A in opposition.
President Kiir and his former vice president, rebel leader Riek Machar, agreed in writing to form an inclusive government by 9th of August and recommitted themselves to ending the violence that has continued for 6 months. Mediator threatened to punish anyone who violates the agreement. Jambo says that kind of threat is not necessary, at least for the government.
They can say whatever they want to say that you have to sign it within 60 days. But for us, it is not about 60 days. If we agree even within 10 days, why not? It is really upon us, the stakeholders, the people of the Republic of South Sudan, and especially the two leaders, to see the wisdom in stopping the bloodshed and bringing peace to our people and assisting our people who have been affected, who are homeless today in this rain, and people who are hungry, without medicines, without shelter, to be reached.
She says her party will use diplomatic channels to avert the threat of punishment. SPLM Secretary for Popular and Syndicated Organizations, Achui Marith Bangol, says the ruling party will begin mobilizing citizens in a bid to explain the latest developments. Bangol says his party will embrace the federal system of governance as suggested by SPLM in opposition, but warned federalism comes with blessings and curses.
We are aware that there are challenges of federalism. First of all, federalism, we use it in the 50s to mean separation. And also during Kokora, it was misused. So those abuses are still hanging in our head. And those are personal fears. Those are not system fears. So we are very pragmatic. We have technical reasons we will give you why we support federalism and where we have to be careful about no federalism.
Both Bangol and Jambo say they recognize the importance of good governance in the effort to bring about a lasting solution to the country's political crisis. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Ruakarinj in Juba.
A former South Sudanese diplomat who resigned 1 week ago is calling on Ministry of Foreign Affairs officials to be transparent about the impact of the current political crisis on civilians. Francis Nazario accused his colleagues at the Foreign Ministry of sending wrong information about his work at South Sudan's mission to the United Nations. Last week, Foreign Ministry spokesman Mawin Makol Arik said Nazario had voted against the will of the government during a UN session to decide the fate of the Palestine's membership. But Nazario says he was instructed by Juba to vote in favor of the Palestine people. He says instead of focusing on the past mistakes of the ministry, Juba should instead put more efforts in convincing the international community to focus on South Sudan's looming humanitarian crisis.
It is a shame for a government to continue to say things are normal. Then you have refugees in thousands and thousands in the neighboring countries. When you come to the issue of the vote in New York, 2 years ago. What happened that day, the 29th of November 2012, that we got instruction? Me personally, when I was there in New York, I was a deputy permanent representative of South Sudan to the UN. I got my instructions clearly from the head of mission, which saying that we need to go and vote in favor of the right of self-determination. It was not my saying. It was not my decision. So the decision of the leadership of the mission, which got instructions from Juba.
And you're saying here that you got instructions from the head of mission, who is Dr. Francis Deng. Did he give you anything in writing that you should vote in favor of Palestine?
I have actually provided all the documents that prove that I was given clear instruction by the head of mission to the leadership of the ministry. That was 2 years ago. And we were called together to Juba. We came and we explained the circumstances of the vote, that we went to vote for one resolution. We found two resolutions merged. We continued with the same logic to vote in favor of the right of self-determination as it has been instructed to us. Victor Francis Deng is the one who gave me instructions, yes. And then he is the one who went and drafted the explanation note that I should go and read after voting. And that statement was on air. Everybody has seen it. It was not my making. It was not my writing, but it was written by the leadership of the embassy in New York.
Spokesperson in the office of the president, that is Wek Ateng, he said you are not happy because you were supposed to be posted to Brussels as an ambassador, but the decision was withheld because the leadership was not happy with your performance in New York. And he says that actually angered you. That's why you resigned.
It is very funny. You know, being deployed or not deployed is not an issue at all. The issue is the continuous exploitation of the vote and the question of Palestine to hinder my advancement, to block my career in the ministry. Some people are continuing using what happened in New York as to block me to go anywhere. It is not my making. Why don't they actually come back and investigate and find out what happened exactly on the 29th of November 2012, who has done what among all of us, starting from the minister to the head of mission to myself, and then we see who is responsible, who has done what, but not to continue to take deputy to be responsible of something since you have a head of mission.
As a result of that vote, you were recalled in Juba. What happened after that?
When we came to Juba, we explained the whole thing, all what had happened, and then we were asked to go back. When we went back to our mission, I was surprised to see that I was the one being recalled and not the head of mission. I came to Juba, reported to the ministry, and it started working, but I got an international job. I took leave without pay for 3 months, but I didn't finish it. I came back to the ministry again when I was given the opportunity to come and work in the office of the minister. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank my Minister of Foreign Affairs for the strong and courageous decision that he took, bringing me back and giving me the opportunity to work in his office. And I worked there until recently when I decided that this is not the way we should continue working when we are seeing the country is actually collapsing.
That's Francis Nazario, former director in the office of South Sudan's foreign minister. South Sudan in Focus contacted the Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesman, Mawin McCall Arik, for comments, but he declined to speak to us. An international human rights group is calling on the peace mediators in Addis Ababa to make sure that justice and accountability are part of any deal signed between President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to stop the fighting in South Sudan. Observers are warning African leaders mediating the peace talks that perpetrators of crimes against civilians in the six-month-long conflict must not go unpunished. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Human Rights Watch sent a letter last week to the three IGAD special envoys at the Addis Peace Talks on South Sudan, saying forces from both sides have been responsible for serious violations of international human rights and international humanitarian law, including widespread targeting of civilians, often because of their ethnicity, in gruesome massacres. Jihan Henry, senior researcher at the Human Rights Watch, says any deal the two sides reach must comply with international law. She says no amnesty should be granted to perpetrators of war crimes and crimes against civilians.
We are concerned that the leaders might try to strike a deal where they do get amnesty.
The letter reminds chairman of the mediation team, former Ethiopian Prime Minister Ambassador Sio Mesfin, Special Envoy retired General Lazarus Sambeyo, and Sudanese General Mohamed Ahmed Mustafa Adabi of the UN Principles on Combating Impunity, which he state, quote, "Even when intended to establish conditions conducive to a peace agreement or to foster national reconciliation, amnesty and other measures of clemency should not extend to serious crimes," end quote. Henry says, unfortunately, South Sudan has a history of impunity for war crimes. She says, in 2006, after the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, blanket amnesty was given to war criminals. And back in 1991, there were no prosecutions for the massacres that took place in Bor. She says IGAD mediators must make sure that those mistakes are not repeated this time around.
The 1991, what happened in Bor, is one example, but there are other, many other examples throughout South Sudan in different regions of South Sudan, where you have people who remember what happened during that long war when one community was pitted against another community. There wasn't accountability for these crimes.
Henry says one way to prosecute war crimes in South Sudan is to set up a court with local, regional, and international prosecutors.
So that could be one option. And there are many benefits to hybrid courts in terms of developing the judiciary and various things. Of course, many things would have to be decided, even the location of the court.
Henry says the ethnic fighting in Jonglei State that pitted members of its community against each other is a good example that peace deals do not hold without a provision for accountability. She says the repeated violations of the peace agreement signed in January to stop the current fighting are also clear evidence that without prosecutions, there will never be a lasting peace in South Sudan.
The peace efforts that were made over time have been consistently broken. And this is our point, is that having a component of justice is what will make it stick.
Nell Crit, senior scholar in residence at the U.S. Institute of Peace, agrees that justice must be incorporated in any peace agreement to be signed in Addis Ababa. He says serious crimes committed in the conflict in South Sudan must not go unanswered.
Because if that's the case, people will not have confidence that anything has changed.
Crit says justice and accountability are not only important for the perpetrators and the victims of injustice, but also for the entire society in order to heal and learn to live together as one nation. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju.
Mungumedev Srakarinj contributed to this report from Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we find out what happened to a Sudanese woman sentenced to death under Sharia law. Stay tuned.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on the events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That is South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
Put your flags up in the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can people balance tradition with modern things?
I think by having like cultural occasions, like when people come and they dress up in their own cultures, they mingle.
It is very hard, but you know, tradition, that is a thing from our first fathers. So to dissolve that, to do away with tradition, is not that easy. But with some modern issues you can introduce, you can also balance. Yeah.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A Sudanese woman sentenced to death by hanging for refusing to resign her Christian faith has appealed her sentence. As VOA fellow Nabi May Abdel Nasser reports, the woman's lawyer says she never converted from Islam, as the court asserts. As the case drags on, the fact becomes less clear.
Maryam Yahya Ibrahim was sentenced to death for apostasy last month by a Khartoum court for converting to Christianity from Islam, even though she said she was raised Christian. Her lawyer says she was raised by her Christian mother after her Muslim father left the family. More on that later in this story. Defense lawyer Muhammad Abdel Nabi says they filed their appeal a week ago. He says the defense team hopes to prove in court that Article 126 that sentences people who abandon the Islamic faith to death is unconstitutional.
The first verdict was based on procedural and topical errors. In addition, Article 126 contradicts Sudan's transitional constitution because Article 126 constricts a person's right to choose their religion. It's also in clear violation of the International Declaration of Human Rights and the International Conventions of Political and Civic Rights. We based our appeal on all of the above.
Abdel Nabi says the errors pointed out in the letter the defense team sent to the court is forcing the presiding judge to reconsider.
Yesterday, we learned that a committee of judges had been formed to look into our appeal. The judges are now reviewing the case, and we expect to hear from them very soon.
But Abdel Nabi and his colleagues on the defense team, who are defending Maryam for free, have more than the court to worry about.
We, the defense team, are constantly getting death threats from radical groups here in Sudan. I personally got threatened by phone.
As more people are heard from, the facts in the case become less clear. For example, prosecutor Abdurrahman Malik says Maryam may not even be her name.
Regarding her name being Abrar and not Maryam, as she claims, we have proven that by presenting documents that say her name is Abrar. She also claims that her mother is from Ethiopia while her father is from Darfur, but she has failed to prove that. She has not been able to get any friends or relatives who can testify to that. And finally, her marriage, which is, she said, is legal and took place at a church in Khartoum, was also untrue because every legal marriage should be registered with the authorities and there should be documents to prove it.
And Abdurrahman says there are no documents proving her marriage at the Khartoum Catholic Church. Asman Al-Hadi says he is Maryam's brother. He says the family doesn't want the husband visiting Maryam. Their 18-month-old son and their newborn baby, who was born nearly 2 weeks ago at the prison. Assamani threatens violence against Christians if Maryam is released.
We will not accept that he visits her in prison, and if the government does not prevent that, we are taking the matter into our own hands. And if she is going to be released, to be with that man or travel with him, it's going to be a religious and ethnic havoc that can only end if one of the parties to it has perished. Churches will be blown up, pastors will die, Copts will get shot, and this is how we can respond.
Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal said the government will protect Maryam Yahya from her family, whether she is found guilty or innocent.
She is in custody because to protect her, first of all, from her family and not from the government. She is released to make sure that she will be totally protected from any violence from her family or something like that.
It is unlikely that Maryam will be executed soon.
See, according to our law and according to Sharia law, she is not going to be sentenced to death because she was pregnant and now she delivered the baby. She will be freed.
Bilal says, as for now, Maryam Ibrahim and her baby are in good condition, and he is confident she will be released soon. For VOA News, I am May Abdel Nasser in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Islamist Sunni militants are threatening to advance on Iraq's capital after seizing several other key cities in a blow to the country's Shiite-led government. A spokesman for the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant and Al-Qaeda offshoot said in a message posted today that the militants also want to take the city of Karbala, which is home to one of the holiest sites for Shiite Muslims. The Pakistani government has condemned what it says were two U.S. drone strikes, calling them a violation of sovereignty. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs said the strikes have a negative impact on Pakistan's efforts to bring peace and stability to the region. It said the ministry is investigating the situation. And finally, gunfire has erupted for a second day on the border between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Reports from the area say soldiers exchanged fire briefly today in a town north of Goma, the capital of Congo's North Kivu province. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Urukundo by Kidum.
Sina mubu inga nubu menyini tangi sikanwa Temera kubiki matichi lukundo Temeru rufu kwa banu Siru kwemera, siru kwisera murukundo Mufukani
Murukundo, satureru ngere
Murukundo, murukundo
Satumera, ushikiru manjiko kwifu mabasi
Murukundo,
murukundo, satumeru
ngere
Ma qui son senso tu mukanda ukori joro numurango ukingira inyungu sumuryango ukuye kirenge undi nawe utema nereke afugua bubezwe timba numubabaro nda
We have been listening to Kidum with that song Urukundo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm